If you want to crush your quota, you're in the right place. My first year in sales, I sold $758,000 on a $150,000 quota, and that was just the beginning. I'm your host, Mary Grothy. I'm a former number one B2B mid-market SaaS sales rep turned CEO. I've sold millions in revenue, broken multiple records, and now I run a company that rebuilds revenue engines and creates top sales performance. This isn't a show about achieving quota. This isn't about being okay in sales. This is about being number one and learning what it takes to crush your quota. All right, let's be honest with each other. Who here has ever had bad sales coaching? Or maybe you had good sales coaching, but you never implemented it because you don't like hearing advice or feedback or like being coached from someone else. Like you just aren't open to receiving it. I'll be honest on this. When I was a top performing rep, I thought I knew everything and I didn't have a lot of respect. Oh, I love my managers, but respect for advice that they gave me or things they would want to coach me through with my own sales performance. Because one, I don't even know the last time they actually sold the product or service that I was selling. And if it was a while ago, I look at, okay, do you even know how to handle common objections? Okay, I had a sales manager go on a meeting with me and he actually said, and this was in 2016 or 2017, and actually said to the prospect, if you could wave a magic wand, I'm like, whoa, buddy, it is not 1995. So I just really struggled with having my managers involved in my sales process when they wanted to guide me through a coaching or training conversation. I wasn't really open to it. I'm like, you don't have any clout or credibility, so don't talk to me. I then carried that short-sightedness into other careers. And even as a young entrepreneur and budding CEO over the last few years, I would have people that would come to me with awareness and feedback and advice. And I just shut them out. I'm like, I don't even want to hear you. I don't want to listen. So thankfully, I learned to get over myself and acknowledge that I have a lot left to learn and people can bring me awareness, can coach me through conversation. And that is what I loved the most. So we're going to deep dive today into this topic about sales coaching and why most sales coaching doesn't work. The big aha that we're going to open up with is the definition of coaching, because I think coaching is very commonly confused with training, management, feedback, other things. But I'm not going to bore you with all of my own thoughts on coaching. I have brought like the absolute sales coaching Mensa, the greatest of all time. I have worked with this man personally for years. He has a very special place in my heart. Mr. Steve Perry said yes to us as a young organization, Sales BQ. And I, again, me being young in my career, someone introduced me to Steve before I started my company. And I thought, why would somebody introduce me to my competitor? And I was so closed off when I first met Steve because we both did sales training and coaching. And then I'm so fortunate that I took my head out of my rear and said, maybe this man, I'm meant to meet him. And what a blessing he has been in my life. He helped us launch our entire training program with Sales BQ. I got to train side by side with this man. He is brilliant. He's such a good human being. And I love him greatly. I'm so excited. He's one of our featured trainers on salesbq.com. When you go to look at our free sales training courses and content, he's one of our featured trainers. He is an expert sales coach. In fact, he does still run his own sales consulting and training firm, Sales Productivity Consultants. It's been around for 21 years. This guy knows what he's doing. And he wants to work with leaders who recognize that sales are the constraint to their company's growth. And they're just not sure what to do to drive more profitable revenue. He has quite a story that he's going to walk us through, from owning and a bakery and working in that industry to how that turned him into an amazing sales coach and trainer. But his current company helps the companies that are in need of that more profitable revenue growth. It helps them remove the sales constraints by developing and implementing customized sales strategies, systems, processes, and coaching sales managers, salespeople, and teams. Steve Perry, whom I adore, welcome to the show.
Oh, man, thank you very much. I'm in awe of your introduction.
Good. Well, you can hire me. I'll come introduce you for other events if you'd like. So look, I know you. I know your story. I'm a huge fan. Let's turn this whole audience into a huge Steve Perry fan. Tell us your story.
Well, thank you, Mary. I appreciate it. So I started out my career as a second grade school teacher up in the mountains of Colorado back in the early 70s. And I loved teaching. I loved the kids, but, you know, didn't like the bureaucracy, didn't like the parents, didn't like the administrators. So I taught for about 3 years. It taught me a lot. And then I, you know, decided that was not for me. And so my wife and I were thinking about what we're going to do next. And we're driving back from an opportunity where I was going to be a State Farm insurance agent in some town in Colorado that I won't mention. And just didn't want to do it. And Becky says to me as we're driving home, I know what we should do. We should start a bakery. So I had never baked before. I never owned a business before. Becky was sitting next to me 8 months pregnant. So of course, we took our life savings and we started a bakery. And we started out in 300 square feet up on Lookout Mountain in Colorado. We grew it over 6 years to 3,000 square feet. And we went out of business. Oh. And we went out of business for two reasons. Basically, one was I didn't understand margin. And that's something I always like to talk to people about. You got to make money to make it all work. And the other thing is I couldn't sell. I'm a school teacher in my heart. I'm more of an introvert. And so I struggled with the sales part of it. And you know, the cold calling, all of that was pretty easy for me because I had an easy message. It was calling up the right kind of restaurant and asking them if they'd like a free sample of fresh chocolate dessert. Mm. And so it was pretty easy to get samples out there.
You think?
And because I had a margin problem, I sold a lot. But once I got into some bigger accounts, I really didn't know what to do. I really didn't enjoy it. And so we went out of business. We didn't go bankrupt. I paid off all my debts over time. But after that, I started with a manufacturing company that needed a trainer. And because I was a teacher and I knew something about sales, I'd be good at training. When I started with this company in 1987, they did about $9 million a year. I worked with them for about 13 years until they were about $250 million. An international company. I've traveled all around the world doing training and development. And at one point in this process, if any of you are familiar with ISO 9000, it's a quality management system, but I implemented ISO 9000 to this company. And what I recognize is that most parts of our organization and other organizations that I've worked with have very clear defined systems and processes throughout their organization. But sales didn't. And we would hire people that we really liked, that seemed to know what the product was, that were outgoing, that had a history in that particular territory, and we'd hire them. And we had no way to manage them or hold them accountable or anything because there was no systems and process in place. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I learned when I left the manufacturing company and I started my sales development company was that, you know, what's my point here? And number one, I wanted to have fun. If you're not having fun doing what you're doing, then you should do something else. So, and I love doing what I'm doing. I have fun doing it. So I wanted to have fun. I wanted to help people. It's my school teacher's heart. And I wanted to make money. And I figured if I do the first two, the second one would come. And it has over time. And what I've really boiled that down to now is that, you know, my mission is to help people really discover their full potential. And well, you know, when you do that, and I remember this with second graders, when you find someone that gets it, it feels great. And I've seen that with the managers, with the salespeople, with the owners of company that I worked with. When they get it, it's pretty spectacular. And Mary, you're experiencing now and what you do.
Yes, I am. I am. And so let's talk about this topic of sales coaching, because you have seen when it's not implemented correctly, that it clearly isn't going to work within an organization. Did anything from my story, was there a call out for you when I was sharing about my frustration with my sales managers and sales leaders about the fact that I just like shut them out, didn't want to hear from them. They didn't have clout credibility. So tell me throughout your time in this work, like when did the light bulb go off to you for how you can develop and coach and train these people coming up through the ranks in the sales function?
Well, I think that so much of this goes back to my time as a teacher. And my belief is that anyone can learn anything if they want to. And so then the question comes, why won't people want to? And when I think about some of the key things that we have to do is sales management, because clearly coaching is a subset of sales management. And if you don't understand that whole picture real well, then you're going to be in trouble. And so kind of the overriding thing is you've got to have a very clear, defined, linear process that's documented that your team follows, because you can't coach someone, you can't mentor them, you can't help them grow unless you've got a process against which they can manage themselves. Because really the key is yeah, we want to manage them, but I always thought that my goal was to create independent team players who followed a clear, defined process and exceeded goal. And that was the goal. If I could create people that could do that, that was awesome. But to do that, I mean, the first thing you have to do is be able to recruit the right people. And many companies don't have a very clear, defined recruiting process, or they recruit people that they like instead of people that really fit what their matrix looks like. So if you're not finding the right people, that's the initial problem. The second thing is we've got to have a very clear, defined accountability plan. And it's got to be an accountability plan that the person buys off on. And so what are the metrics? What am I holding you accountable to? Do you agree with it? Does this all make sense? Are you going to be able to do it? But what I find, Mary, is that when you hold people accountable to agreed upon goals, what ends up happening is that their limitations really start being exposed, not just to me as the coach or manager, but they become self-evident to them. And once people start recognizing that they're struggling, that they're not closing the business they thought they would close, that's when we need to develop them. And so when I think about salespeople, if you're not hitting goals, it's always for one of two reasons. Either you don't know what to do, in which case you need training, and training is about awareness, knowledge, and skills, or you know what to do and you can't or won't do it. That's what coaching is all about. How do I help somebody really recognize that they're not doing what they could do effectively, and how do I help them start getting it? And I think the biggest problem that managers have, and this is probably one reason, Mary, you were hesitant with the managers you had, mm-hmm. is that managers do a really good job of training. So if you have a manager, or if you are a manager and you are telling your salesperson what to do, that's training. And I always think of management as having children. And so if any of you have children and you tell them the same thing and they're not doing it, the same thing happens in sales. If you tell them the same thing and they're not doing it, then it's the definition of insanity. So good coaches don't tell people what to do. Great coaches are understanding where that person is in the sales process, finding out where that is, and then they're asking them questions. And I always look at the coaching area as really sales therapy. And you don't conduct sales therapy by telling the person what's wrong with them. You conduct sales therapy by helping them understand where their lack of potential is and how they might be able to achieve it.
Well, so a lot of salespeople, because I put myself in this category, we are like precious little children. And even though like my managers, I think, had the right intention, and I even would argue that in some of their deliveries, it didn't sound like, or they weren't saying words of what was wrong with me, but that's how I heard it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I had so much sensitivity to the feedback coming my direction. So is there something that sales managers can do on that specific point that when they're engaging in that conversation, because I feel like this is a huge gap, because salespeople that we're just unique. And I think we have a lot of pride. I think we're very passionate about the work that we do. And I think that it's a hard job. So we take it seriously and we do put forth great effort. And I think that there's sensitivity if someone's going to bring something to our attention, so we may not hear it the right way. So how do you prep your salesperson to enter into a coaching conversation?
Well, I think that the first thing, I'll talk on that in just a second, Mary, but you brought up a really key point, is that there's a difference between someone's identity, who they are as a person, and what their role is as a salesperson. And as managers, as leaders of companies, we frequently misdiagnose what we're focusing on. And we tell people what you did was bad. And that focuses on how they feel about themselves. What we need to focus is on what the role is. What is your behavior? What did you engage in? You know, you tried really hard, but, you know, in that conversation with that person, you know, what happened in your role as a sales person? And so what we need to do is really focus in on the role. What is the role the person has? And so when we're going through a basic coaching conversation, and really one of the things that I find with sales managers is they're not spending enough time coaching. They should probably, these days, they should probably be spending at least 50% of their time coaching, if not more. And that's individual one-on-one coaching. And these sessions don't need to be super long. These don't need to be hour-long sessions. You can accomplish a lot in 20 or 30 minutes. And especially if you're doing ongoing, incremental, reinforcing kind of coaching, and you have a weekly meeting. Now, if you've got someone who is experienced, really gets it, maybe you don't need to meet with them every week. But a younger person, every week, maybe two or three times a week for 20 minutes. And what you're always going to be doing is assuming that they're doing the appropriate behavior. Okay, you've got them, you're holding them accountable to agreed upon goals. You have a chart, or your CRM is tracking the behavior, so they're doing the things they should be doing. And when we start looking at that, we just ask the questions, okay, how's that activity going? Are you getting into the sales process? Are you going to the next step of the process? And what I find, if someone is not getting those initial conversations, it's usually for one of two reasons. Either they're not doing enough activity, or they're doing enough activity and their message isn't resonating with the prospect. And so we can start out with, tell me about a call that went really well. And I'm also going to want to know about a call that didn't go so well. And so they can start telling me about the call. And what I always want to be able to do, what salespeople tend to want to do, is say, well, I dialed the phone and I did this and this and this. And we don't need to hear the whole movie. We just need to hear how the movie ended. So we need to be sure we have the salesperson say, okay, on that great call, how did it end? What's the end of that call? And they can describe to you what happened at the very end. Now, at that point, you can be very clear where you are in the sales process that you've outlined and whether you need to go back and review some of the details or whether you go forward into the next step. So coaching is basically a process of debriefing and pre-briefing. And you have to debrief and pre-brief in the context of what your system is.
Okay. So there's so much goodness in this. I'm going to pause for a second and I'm going to recap what we've talked about so far. And then we're going to dig into this, what you just talked about with the debriefing and pre-briefing, because I just recorded a course on this. It's about pre-call planning, and I'll explain that in more detail in a second. So one, I need to just recap on something that you said earlier that was super important, because we do have both executives and sales leaders as well as salespeople listening to this. So I'm addressing our sales executives and like our executive leaders and other executives listening to this right now. You can't go and solve the coaching problem if you haven't solved the recruiting problem, the sales playbook problem, establishment of processes and order, and having a single source of truth for what the sales org does. The policy document, the sales process, the steps and stages, the methodology that you've adopted. If you haven't set your sales leaders, your sales managers up for success to know what they're holding their reps accountable to, then what is the point of sales coaching? And then backing that up even a step further is, do you have a recruiting strategy that you're not just looking for top sales performers and past performance and people who interview extremely well and can represent your brand in a strong fashion? you're also looking for the DNA of a salesperson where they're coachable and they're actually willing to continue to advance and learn and become better and be a great member of this team, in addition to possessing the skills that are required in order to tactical execution to be great in the role. But you have to look on the inner being as well as what they're able to do. So I had to pull that back around because I want to make sure it's hit. Get your recruit strategy right. Get your sales playbook right. Get your infrastructure right. Because you can't train up and coach a salesperson to be great and then put them back in their crappy ecosystem where they can't succeed. So fix the ecosystem first for everything that goes into infrastructure and talent and process and your management layer. Then I think the biggest call out is what Steve is saying, is you have to enable your sales management layer to learn what coaching even is. Because coaching isn't just showing up to a conversation with a rep and telling them everything that they did wrong or that needs improvement. Like, that'll be a massive shutdown. The rep is not going to respect that conversation and nothing good is going to come from that. So what are you doing to coach your sales managers? I mean, that's an area that Steve could do something so powerful for your organization. If you're listening to this going, whoa, have we ever taught our sales managers even how to have a coaching conversation and like what coaching is? Then you should be talking to Steve about coming in and training up your management layer to be able to be great coaches to their people. So now we're taking it into that step further. Something I loved, the tell me about the call, because then I think salespeople have a lot of pride. I'm speaking from experience because I am one. I would love if a manager, before they start telling me like what could have been improved or giving me feedback, is I would love if they just ask me what my thoughts were. Tell me about the call. And that way I can paint the picture and I feel more comfortable when I get to self-report first, because if I knowingly made a mistake, I'm probably embarrassed by it. And it's easier for me to address it rather than have a manager tell me something I already know. So I would prefer if in that coaching conversation, they ask me, well, tell me about the call. And that way I can debrief from my perspective. A great sales manager and sales coach in that coaching conversation will then expand through further questions of, well, tell me, you had some hesitancy when you were talking about that component. Do you think something should have been done differently? Like, if you had a chance to do it a second time, how would you have approached it? Or as we sat here together and we watched the playback of the meeting or listened to the recording, do you hear something different than maybe you heard the first time when you were sitting there? What did you hear upon the playback? So great coaches ask a series of questions and they help the person actually come to the conclusion themselves. And so the manager and coach never is in a position to have to give the feedback and tell them. So I love what you've walked us through to this point. I thought it would help our audience to just recap this and see these steps and stages of building a great sales organization that relies on good coaching. So you made the comment, with coaching, you need to focus on two areas, debriefing and pre-briefing. I can't wait to hear your thoughts on this because I just launched a course in our Quota Crusher training room of pre-call planning. And in that, I talked about the importance of pre-call and post-call to actually talk it through before it even happens and to get out in a more proactive mentality from a sales coaching perspective versus just reactive. So I want to hear what your perspective is on those two.
Well, one of the analogies I use often is that I ask folks, have you ever played a musical instrument? Have you ever been an athlete? And almost everyone says yes to one of those. And I said, okay, let's say you play the piano. Have you ever done a piano recital in front of a group without practicing? And of course they say no, they would never do that. Have you ever done a sales call where you haven't pre-planned or practiced what you're going to say? And everybody does. We always practice on our prospects. And that's, if you have a capable sales manager, there's no reason to do that. You can do the rehearsal before the actual piece and practice it and become competent before you actually go in front of someone. And if you do practice in front of someone, you can go back to your sales manager, you can debrief it, find out what went well, what didn't go well. You can have the conductor change some of the notes you used, and you go back and do it again with the conductor's help.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. Okay. Transform this for me in the coaching conversation. If you have a rep that is entering into a meeting in 20 minutes and you have proactively put a pre-call plan meeting on the calendar or a pre-brief for the meeting, walk me through the structure of that conversation and how you're going to guide them to what could possibly happen in that sales meeting. What's the construct of that meeting?
Okay. The first step is always, what was the result of your last meeting? So I always want context. Now, there may not have been a last meeting. It may have been a phone call booking the meeting, but that's still context. Mm-hmm. So it's always what happened last. And then I want to know, what is your agreement? What is your agenda for the upcoming meeting? And frequently they forget to set one. And you've got to have an agenda for your next meeting. And so it may be that 20 minutes is, okay, you didn't set the agenda. Let's talk about what the agenda should be. And then we talk about where are you in the sales process? Because where you are in the sales process is going to help you determine what your objective is for the call. Mm-hmm. So I think that one of the mistakes salespeople make is that my objective for this call is to close this client. And unless you're in a one call close kind of business, and very rarely are we anymore, the goal is not to close the business. The goal is to move to the next step of the sales process. So you're just
right. And maybe
moving.
They haven't even thought about that right. Granular. And I have to call that out because I'm a high optimist, high urgency salesperson. So sorry, Steve, I'm the pain in the butt sales rep.
I know,
like, what do you
I
mean
know.
Every meeting isn't one call close? Isn't that why I'm in sales? Like, I literally show up still to this day as a CEO of House of Revenue. When I meet with CEOs, I want to close them in the first call. Are we scaling your company or not? Like, we have 100% success track record. So are we working together or not? And so in my mind, I'm like absolutely going for the close. And in a way, I realize, like, even as many years as I've been selling, that is a huge point to call out. Yeah. So thank you for sharing that, that I really do go in thinking I'm closing the deal. And when I can start to sense throughout the meeting that maybe we're not closing today, I have to get laser focused on constructing what the next steps of the sales process are going to be. But man, maybe I should think about that a little bit more before I get on the call. Like, this is great coaching just for me.
Well, and I think that, you know, you think about Glengarry Glen Ross, the famous old sales movie, and it's all about always be closing, A, B, C. And I hate that idea. But the reality is, on any meeting, phone call, meeting, wherever you are in the sales process, you are always closing for something. You are either closing the file. This account is not going to work for me. I'm closing the file. I'm moving on to someone else. I'm closing the deal, which means money is changing hands, or I'm closing for the next step in the process. So you are always closing. It just depends on the meeting and the context, what you're closing for.
Yes, agreed. Oh, this is so good. So one of my favorite things that I did in the training for the pre-call plan is for them to think of every possible outcome that could happen just based on experience. So begin with the end in mind. And Stephen Covey. So I think thinking about, like, okay, if we're pre-call planning before this call, walk me through every possible scenario. So this is coaching that you think could potentially happen. So you've got your plan, best case scenario, this is how the call goes. Here's all the possible next steps. But what do you think could, based on the pre-call plan that we've had or your intro call, like you said, what could go wrong in this call? And sometimes I'll have reps come back and say, well, I'm really worried about X, or I have a little bit of a red flag because of Y, Z, fill in the blank. Well, if you spend time actually talking about those things as a coach, as a manager, before they happen, do you know what happens? You rehearse. Just like your analogy with playing an instrument, you rehearse. And so you're rehearsing that chorus, you're rehearsing that line. And then what happens when it happens in the sales meeting? It's not foreign. It doesn't trigger you. It doesn't put you into this fight or flight. You're composed. You're like, oh, this is the thing we practiced because we had a feeling this may come up. So I love all of your points today, Steve. The pre-call plan, that pre-brief and the debrief are critical elements of coaching. I am being cognizant of time here and want to wrap us up. You are a featured trainer with our Quota Crusher brand under salesbq.com. You can be contacted through that, fill out the form. All you need to do is read about our featured trainer, go to Steve Perry, look at what he brings to the table with his coaching and training. If you're slightly interested in even having a conversation with the man, which I hope you are, fill out the form. He'll get a meeting scheduled with you right away, and you all can see where you take it from there. But Steve, I don't want to cut us off prematurely. So what else? Any last nuggets, any wisdom, anything that you're thinking, gosh, Mary, we can't stop recording until I say this?
Well, if I can just take a little bit of time, this may last a bit long, but you talked about some of the leaders that might be listening today. And I had mentioned earlier that the sales process was recruiting, accountability, development, then you motivate people and that grows revenue. But what I see with a lot of companies is they go through this in the opposite way. So you've got a sales rep that isn't growing revenue appropriately. And so I've got to find some way to motivate him. So I use a carrot or the stick to try to get him motivated. If that still doesn't grow revenue, then I guess I have to train him. I guess I have to try to coach him. And so development, training, and coaching tend to be a failure strategy because this thing isn't working. When that doesn't work, now I hold him accountable so I can track what he's doing so I can let HR let me fire him. And now I have to recruit because I have a gap in my team. And I end up recruiting too quickly and recruiting the wrong person. And what I find is that a lot of companies tend to go through this process backwards. They find someone that's not working well. They try to recuperate him, but to make him better. And they end up getting rid of him. Where if you recruit right, hold people accountable right, everything, Mary, everything you teach is the right way to do things. And I hope companies recognize if they're doing it backwards, because if they are, it's going to end up in trouble.
So this is an area that they should probably fill out the form and talk to you about this. If you're having a cycle of turnover with your reps, and they're not succeeding and hitting the number, and this has just been year over year, and it's something prevalent in your organization, then go talk to Steve. Like, he can walk you through the process and help you identify where the gaps might be just in the recruiting part of it. Probably worth a conversation. And you're exactly right. It is a vicious cycle, but it could also be a virtuous cycle if you get the recruiting component correct out of the gate. Brilliant ad. Thank you for that. I'm going to highly encourage everybody, go to salesbq.com, find Steve, fill out the form, have a conversation, connect with him on LinkedIn. And Steve, anything else for us?
No, I think I've taken enough of your time. I appreciate you taking time today.
Of course. All right. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Quota Crusher podcast. Did you like it? Be sure to give us a rating and share it with your friends. And don't forget to connect with me on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram. Lastly, if your company needs a boost in revenue, like real revenue growth, send me a message and we'll discuss how our team builds revenue engines for our clients, covering all facets like marketing, sales, RevOps, and customer success. Until next time.